Chapter 13. Kraftkrieg. The village square was empty, but I could still hear them. It was very strange. There were some decorations out. Someone had driven a long Faraday pole into the center of the square and had run twine from the roofs of the surrounding buildings to the top of the pole. There were many strips of gaily colored linen tied in knots along the twine's length. I could hear the cheering coming from the west end of the village toward the Ruhr. It would die down sometimes, almost to where I couldn't hear it, then swell up again like the blaze of a roaring fire. I walked between Herdin's alehouse and the merchant's general store, and then, looking down the gentle slope behind them, I saw everyone. They were all gathered on the banks of the Ruhr, intermixed with what appeared to be everyone from the next village over. There were several different areas roped off in the grass. In some, I could see men holding stones as large as a horse's head. They vied against each other, tossing the stones across the field as far as they could, and every time one landed, the onlookers would send up a resounding cheer. In another area, I saw men in groups of two bent over wooden tables that I recognized from the alehouse, hands locked together in a bout of arm wrestling, and beside this was another area where yet more men took turns splitting giant logs with axes. When one of these men managed to split a log in a single blow, there was a loud cheer. When they had to swing more than once, a sigh of regret. And then, in the final area, the largest men from either village stood together with their seconds and watched while two combatants, men I would have called giants before I met Risa, battled each other with their bare hands, throwing each other to the ground, grabbing and twisting limbs, seeming almost to be pulling arms from sockets as they crashed against each other and writhed around in the grass and the dirt. The crowd watched them hungrily as they wrestled, and I could see that the other large men who awaited their chance were becoming more and more agitated as they watched, as if the contest playing out before them stoked some inner fire, and they drank much beer as they waited. The wives were drinking beer as well, which was uncommon but not unheard of. And sometimes a few adventurous ones would break away from the gaggle, come closer to the tournament, and flash their breasts at the combatants. This always elicited a cheer from anyone aware enough to see it happen, even their husbands, who seemed to watch these antics with a kind of pride, as if their wives had become prized horses they were eager to show. I saw Nyx orbiting the edge of the wrestling match, removed from the crowd by several paces so as not to offend them. He was dividing his attention between the contest and the breasts. I went to go stand beside him, and with all the excitement going around, he didn't notice I was there. I backhanded his shoulder to get his attention. After he flinched away like a moron, he looked at me suspiciously and said, "You're not gonna get us thrown out of here, are you? I think Ilsa's had nearly enough to hoist her skirts. Don't get us thrown out, Udo." "No, I'm not going to. Just shut up about that, okay? What's going on here? You don't recognize a Kraftkrieg when you see it?" "Yes, of course I recognize a fucking Kraftkrieg, Nyx. I am not a simpleton. What I meant to ask was, where did this come from? I had no idea there was one being planned. We always do a few of these around this time of year." "Yeah, I guess I lose track of time. Still, it seems sooner than usual for some reason. How come I haven't heard anyone talking about this? They usually can't shut the fuck up about a Kraftkrieg for weeks when they know it's coming."
"They have been talking about it, Udo. Where have you been?"
"I thought about that. I'd only been away a couple of days." "This is nonsense," I said. "I still would have heard something. I was off on a dig, but I was only gone a little while." Nyx shrugged and said,
"Well, this one did come up pretty fast. Clement, that's the mayor of the other village, dropped the glove on our people about 2 weeks ago on account of our beating them last year. Our people weren't going to let that slide, so this event, the first of the year, was arranged rather quickly. I think maybe we didn't want to let them have too much time to prepare, but I think if they were the ones as dropped the glove, well, maybe they've already been preparing." This made sense to me, and I nodded. "Still, I can't believe I didn't hear anything. You spend most of your time away from everyone else, Udo."
"Well, yes, that is true, but
You say they've had this in the works for the last 2 weeks?
Week and a half, at least.
I counted out a few days in my mind. Week and a... Huh. Nix, why didn't you say anything about this the last time I saw you? This is prime gossip. You can't shut up about that shit.
Clement hadn't issued his challenge last time I saw you.
What? Now I know you're talking through your ass. They just tossed us out of the alehouse 3 days ago.
No, Udo, that was nine.
He was interrupted by a huge bellow. It erupted from behind us like the sound of a collapsing building. Nix and I both flinched, and I noticed that several people along the outer ring of spectators did the same. Then I turned to see what had made the sound. Oh, no. It was Risa. He came charging down the slope from our village like an enraged bull, arms, head, and legs pumping nearly faster than my eyes could track. He flew across the field, this nearly naked giant, and many would swear after they'd seen him that his feet never even touched the ground, that he moved so quickly as to achieve flight. After a few drinks, Nix proclaimed to anyone who would listen that if an archer had fired an arrow at us from the center of the village square, Risa would have beaten it down to the riverbank. And I have no idea how he could make that claim, because as soon as he saw the giant coming at us, he screamed and ran away. Nobody saw him again for a few hours at least. Several onlookers had seen him as well, but most of those closest to the contest hadn't realized he was coming. The wrestlers wrestled on, and the onlookers looked on, all the while the outer ring of people parted like water at Reese's passing, diving out of the way in some cases as if he would stampede them, which I suppose might have been possible. They had to notice him when he leaped into the center of the ring, though. They had no other choice. The wrestlers from each village stood there transfixed, staring at Risa with their mouths hanging slack. They still gripped each other's arms loosely, as though they'd forgotten they were supposed to be fighting. Risa took each of them by the shoulders, separated them, and pushed them apart. It was incredible. These men were the largest either village had to offer. They were enormous. They were the kind of men that had to duck their heads to pass through doorways. They would have required that special chairs be made to accommodate their size, and all but the largest, strongest horses would have collapsed under their weight. They were dwarfed by Risa. The giant made them ridiculous. He pushed one of the men to the side of the ring, gently, and then walked the other over to the opposite end. He put this man down, frowned at him, pointed at his feet, and said, "Here." I recognized this man as one of ours. His face was as white as gypsum as he pressed into the crowd, sank inside of it, became a part of it. A few moments later, I saw he had escaped from the other side and was running back to town. Any hope of controlling Reese's introduction into our little society was long gone now. There he stood in the middle of the Kraftkrieg's most popular contest, nearly as naked as the day he was born, if he'd been born at all, and everyone from two villages stood around him gawking. The other contests had been abandoned, the stone toss, the arm wrestling, the chopping. I saw the participants of these walking slowly to our area, eyes wide as if they saw Sunna falling from the sky, and I imagined their dismay at the thought of competing with this monster, who was clearly unmatched, even in the foot races, which would probably kick off in a few days. They pressed in toward him, wanting to close the distance. And yet there was an empty gulf between them. This crowd of people pressing in, and the giant standing in the center like the pupil of an eye. They were at war with their own fears, those villagers, and I could see that war playing out in their faces. Faces that twisted between fear, confusion, curiosity, and awe over and over, as if their minds had fallen apart. They were stuck somehow, and I realized that any one of those emotions could emerge victorious over the others, and knew as well that the wrong victor likely spelled death for Risa. I watched him shrink away as the crowd pressed in, saw how hard he tried to make himself small under their gaze. He backed away two steps, and then seemed to realize there were more behind him. Whirling on the spot, trying to see all of them at once, head darting around like a hunted animal. Then he swung around and clapped eyes onto mine, and I saw the look that was within them.
so like the eyes I had once seen inside myself. He whimpered, and I heard it. Inside of me, it felt as though something fractured.
Move! Stand aside, all of you! Stand aside, I say!
I shoved into the crowd, elbowing men and women alike to drive them aside. Years behind the spade and pick had given me a wide base and excellent leverages. I was shorter than the rest of them, low to the ground like a fucking wedge. When I jabbed my shoulders into them, they goddamn moved.
Back! All of you back if you value your lives!
That got their attention. I broke through the wall of people, crossed the dead space of open grass to my friend, and put my back to his chest. Instantly, I felt his hand engulf my shoulder and squeeze, though not painfully. His hand trembled.
Just hang in there, kid, I whispered to him.
I couldn't tell if the crowd heard me, but the risk was necessary. If he bolted, it would all be a ruin. I'd never catch the poor bastard.
All of you listen. Many of you know me. You know who I am. And even if you do not approve of me, you know that I am a man who knows his place in this world. I keep to myself and keep myself removed from the rest of you because I know my place well. I have built my home out of your sight, so you do not have to see me any more than necessary. I do everything in my power to minimize my presence, including drinking alone in my home when I can afford it. I stay well away from your homes in all cases except when selling my critical wares to the fine, gifted tradesmen of this village. I noticed here that Yanders gave me quite an ugly look, but ignored it. I couldn't be expected to answer for every little prejudice. I do not say this to tell you things you do not already know. I speak now to remind you that Udo is a man who knows his place. To explain to you that I am not a man who seeks glory, recognition, fame, or acceptance.
Get to the fucking point, Udo, for Godin's sake, someone shouted.
I am. I assure you I am. I've come to tell you that this man who stands behind me now is a friend to this village. His name is Risa, and I have been given to understand that he is a true giant, descended from the lineage of the very long-forgotten human king who fathered Thunair.
Oh, shit! It is well known that Asker was only a legend, someone shouted.
Who was that? I called. Come forward so we can all see you.
It was Stavka, the prick, looking very self-important as he emerged into the center of the ring.
Oh, it's you, I said. I'm a little surprised not to see you among the wrestlers, Stavka. A man so large and strong. It seems our village would benefit much from your strong back and powerful shoulders.
Yes, well, certain responsibilities have kept me from competing today.
Must have hammered your shoulder dead forging that new sword blade, I muttered.
What was that?
Nothing. Come, Stavka. Come stand by Risa for a moment, if you please.
He spent some time staring at the both of us. He looked pretty unhappy being called out, probably because he was every bit as scared of Risa as the rest of the village. It was a nasty spot for him to be in, and I won't deny I did it to him intentionally. I'd called him out before two villages, me, a digger, and for him to decline would have been a staggering blow to his standing. He came on slowly and stood next to the giant, several paces away.
Oh, come now, Stavka. Is that as close as you'll stand? You must be the most powerful man in our village.
I heard some snickers at this and was cheered. There wasn't the slightest chance I had any allies in that group, but everyone loves to see the strongest man knock down a peg or two. I intended to use this to Reese's advantage as much as possible.
He's quite safe, Stavka, so long as you're good to him, I prodded. He won't hurt you. You won't, will you, Risa?
He nodded, both to me and to Stavka. Thank every fucking god there was, but he nodded right when we needed it the most.
There, see? It's perfectly safe. Come on now, please. You'll see there's a point.
Well, praise Frigg's love, then, Stavka said irritably.
He sidled closer to Risa and crossed his arms over his chest like a stubborn shit. I turned back to the crowd and said,
Now look at these two together.
Is there a man, woman, or child among you who will deny that Stavka is the largest and strongest man in our village? Will any of you step forward to challenge him now? No? What about our guests, who have traveled overland to vie with our people according to the old ways? Any of you at all? Of course, no one stepped forward. Stavka was a big son of a bitch, as dangerous as he was ugly. If he tried to ass-rape a bear out in the forest, the bear would probably just beg him nicely to stop. The only reason I knew it was safe for me to get mouthy with him was that he wouldn't want to dirty his hands caving in my face. I said, "No, I thought not. And that's not intended as an insult. You'd have to be a fool to try him." There were some angry murmurs from the visiting village at this statement, but I pressed on. "Now look at him as he stands by the giant. The biggest man of any three villages, I'd wager, reduced to a child by this enormous creature. I ask you, who but a true giant could descend from the lineage that sired the very sky god?"
"Take care, Udo," our mayor heard and warned. "You imply Thunayr is a demigod. This is blasphemy as you travel to the southern cities."
"The cities to the south are too wrapped up in their own dogma to consider true philosophy," I countered. "They have dulled their wits with education. They have forgotten the old ways. They have forgotten the stories. Here, at the edge of Erda, where life is hard and means scarce, we need not be enwrapped in these things. Here we may discuss deep truth."
"What evidence have you that he is descended of this line?" one of the visitors demanded. "Besides the fact that he is very large."
"Very large," I laughed. "Are you blind, sir?"
"A man may grow large.
But look at him, for the love of sanity. Look at him. See his proportions. I'll allow, having lived in Colmar in my youth, I have seen many amazing things. I have seen other giants in my time, some even as large as Risa. Have any of you? Anyone? Anyone at all?" I feared I would be the only one. Most people living at the mountain's edge never went further than Schwerin. Most, in fact, had never been as far as Plotzdorf. It was a tremendous gamble, but it was all I could think of. They weren't accepting the story on the strength of my word alone. I needed to enlist outside help, willing or not. I wondered if I had perhaps blundered from the outset. Should I have just given them the truth? That I had spoken directly with Ing, who had commanded me to care for her child? Right. The mother of Erda had entrusted her godling son to a fucking digger to protect and keep safe. They'd be lining up for miles to stack stones atop my chest. Blessedly, a man toward the back raised his hand, and I felt my legs go slack. They nearly buckled before I locked my knees. "Thank you, good sir," I called. "Would you share with us where you were when you saw your giant?"
"Goslar."
There were a few whistles offered up from the crowd. Goslar was nearly as far south as Colmar, which was as far south as you could get before you had to drink salt water. "Thank you. And did the giant you saw look anything like Risa?"
"He did not."
"Please, sir, would you describe your giant's aspect now?"
"He was larger than Risa, I think. But I could be wrong. I only ever saw him in a chair."
"Oh, praise the Nine." "Why only in a chair?" I asked. I knew damned well why.
"He could not stand freely. His body was bent under its own weight. He could not so much as lift his head. His neck had been so burdened under his size. And his body was misshapen. His spine was crooked, and his hands palsied like the claws of an old man. His face appeared as if the bones of his skull had continued to grow throughout his life, with the brow and cheeks sticking out so far that his eyes were hidden in darkness. I think he may have been dying."
I nodded. I looked at faces in the crowd as he spoke. To a man, they all looked Risa up and down, as if struggling to match him to the wretched creature that was described. I could see how they failed, and it elated me. "Sir, would you say that Risa is of the type of giant you saw in Goslar?"
"No.
I would not say that at all.
Why?
Well, look at him. You saw how he ran, how he moves. With all my heart, no. He is nothing like the dying man in Goslar.
Many people began to speak at once. Stavka slunk away into the crowd and did his damnedest to disappear, but I saw how the men around him jabbed his arms lightly with their elbows. The more they smiled at him, the blacker Stavka's expression grew.
Well and good, well and good, Herdin shouted over the chatter. When they ceased, he continued.
It's clear, Udo, that this giant is something quite different from anything we've ever seen. And for my part, I believe he is more than a man. Much more. Had I not seen...
Risa is his name?
Had I not seen Risa with my own eyes, I would not have believed it.
But... of the lineage of Thunair?
Where do you come by this knowledge?
That's a rather broad leap.
He was right, damn him. I could have kicked myself for not having an answer ready. My only excuse is that I was making that shit up as I went. I have no gift for storytelling at all, and it never occurred to me that I'd have to back up any of these claims outside of just pointing at Risa and going, see?
It is a broad leap, Herdin, you're right. But you haven't heard where I found him.
Well, where did you find him, Udo?
Where did I find him?
It's what I asked.
Well, I found him. Obviously, up in the Barrier Mountain.
It was a gamble. No one liked to admit a man like me was climbing around in the mountains. They all knew what I was doing up there. I could have told them I was jerking off in my own shit and probably would have received the same response. I found him up in the mountains, you see, up on a ledge where he was surrounded by many drawings etched into the stone. The ledge is under an overhang of rock where the drawings are protected from the elements and are rendered using the old ways. No language, not of men today, but the drawings of our ancestors who understood the bear and the wolf and the rushing river, the bounding deer and the gods. I saw depicted our world Erda flying through chaos on wings that span forever. Wings that stretched out further than time. And Godan on her back. I saw Thunair, the vast open sky. In these paintings also was shown a race of giants. Giants who had come forth from the rock.
They were sent by the Dwergas?
Some fucking idiot shouted.
No. No, they are beyond the Dwergas. They come from the next world, as the stories say.
Again, much muttering and exclamation. People flapping their yaps like housewives beating the dust from their rugs. They carried on like that for a long time, and I took a chance to glance at Risa. His hand had not once left my shoulder through all this mess, not counting those times I had to step away from him to engage the mob. I always returned to his side, though. And his hand always found me again. It had stopped shaking, and when I looked at him, I saw that the fear was gone. In its place, I saw only trust. I didn't like it. The look made it difficult for me to breathe, somehow.
Can you take us to this place, Udo? Herdin asked.
Of course, I said immediately, wondering how in the name of Thunair's ice-cold balls I was going to manage it. I wondered if we could escape them on the way. Risa certainly could, but I had no way to instruct him where he should run to, or even that he should run, or that the plan would be to run when the timing was right. What about Ambrosius? Circle back to get him? Then what? The old sack of bones could barely maintain a trot.
But will you go see it now? We are in the midst of the Kraftkrieg. Once begun, it must be completed. The victories of the combatants are forfeit otherwise, as dictated by the oldest laws. I relaxed a bit when I saw them all consider this, but only a bit. Herdin seemed to be thinking it over carefully. Probably he was thinking about the fact that a Kraftkrieg is opened in the morning and closed in the evening each day until the end of the celebration.
Breaking the contest in the middle of the day was a clear violation of form, but there was nothing in the traditions prohibiting an interval of rest between game days. It was an old and necessary rule. It would have been too easy for one of the combatant tribes to void the results if they did not perform well, and Herdin, the officious twat, was considering this at the worst possible time. "Let's also consider," I blurted, "that Risa is one of ours now. I am his protector. He lives with me. It means he is a member of our village. He has come to compete in our name." The mob erupted. There was so much chatter being thrown across the field I couldn't tell what all was said, but I caught snatches here and there. I listened to them yammer, darting my eyes in all directions, checking on Risa to make sure he was still with me. It seemed there were two basic arguments going around. Some of the mob sounded pretty happy that Risa was there to fight. Others, not so much. You can probably guess which of them were not enthusiastic.
"This is an egregious use of the old forms," one man shouted over the rest.
I didn't recognize him. Never saw him before in my life. I supposed he was a visitor.
"Our hosts have admitted here today that this giant is an outsider. Their own people were as shocked as we to see him, and now he is suddenly one of theirs. Most of you know me. I am Berthold, son of Burkhard. From my mouth is spoken only the truth, and today, the truth says that this is a shabby, slippery business."
A cheer erupted from half of the field. Men and women alike came forward to slap Berthold on the shoulders, nodding heads, drinking greedily from tankards. It made my mouth water to see them, but I resisted the distraction. I considered the sounds the crowd made rather than the words they said. I listened for the sounds of a souring mob. A good mob of people as an ebb and flow, like the tide coming in to enfold the docks out in the shipping districts. Sometimes that flow runs sour, and you can smell it coming if you've seen it enough times. The air goes sullen and close. You can feel it on your skin, within your chest, behind your balls. But sometimes the flow is to your advantage. Sometimes, if you're lucky, that flow runs in your favor beyond all reason, so that you've sparked something beautiful that grows and sustains itself. You can ride it out with skill. Sometimes, a simple word spoken at the right moment can reduce a city to ashes. I saw them nodding, saw the back slapping, the posturing. I saw the men from both sides puffing themselves up like brightly colored birds in search of a sound fucking, and knew to stand back. My work was finished.
"Well, I can certainly understand Berthold's fear," Stafka began.
He seemed relieved that everyone's attention was directed away from him.
"I never said I was afraid."
"You must be. Just look at him. You'd be fools to try."
More shouts, curses, and grumbles. I could feel the tension in the air, and it was delicious.
"It is not a matter of fear," Berthold insisted. "The men of our village fear nothing."
"Fear their wives,"
someone offered in a laughing voice. Everyone laughed, even Berthold. It was a touch well scored. I saw Berthold settle back a bit, and smiles began to emerge.
"Any man with a good sense of survival learns a healthy fear of his wife's tongue," he called back,
and the men of both villages all nodded, while their women smirked.
"But I do not speak of that now. I speak now of simple mathematics, the sheer size of your man. Just look at him. No one here will deny that he is colossal."
Risa shook my shoulder a bit, so I looked back at him. His face was confused, and he nodded at me as if asking a question. I whispered, "They're all unmanned by the size of your cock. Just don't worry. It's all in your favor." I do not know if he understood me.
"The point, good people, is that wrestling this giant makes as much sense as wrestling Erda. A good bout of wrestling is about speed. It is about skill and technique. But most importantly, a good bout of wrestling is about two opponents evenly matched who strive against each other heroically. The best bouts are decided by a sliver of skill and a yard of guts."
We all stood around again while everyone cheered themselves stupid. I started worrying a lot less about finding a magical painted cave later that day. These fucking people would officiate themselves into the next growing season the way they carried on.
I will wrestle the giant.
The voice boomed from the rear of the crowd. Everyone else fell to silence, and I watched as the mob parted. I was shorter than most of the people out there, even the women in many cases, so I couldn't see over their heads to find who had spoken. But when they parted, I saw who stood at the other end of the field. He was at least a head taller than Stavka, with long, dirty brown hair and a beard that covered his chest. He may have been the hairiest man I've ever seen. His face was just a small, pink smudge in the center of all that hair. He was clearly enormous, with homespun linens covering his legs and torso. He seemed more ogre than man. In his hand was a stone as big around as Stavka's wife's ass, which he seemed to be holding as easily as a loaf of bread. When he dropped it, it buried halfway into the grass. Frozen.
Durska? You're certain of this?
The huge man came forward into the circle, eyes locked on to Risa. He looked the giant up and down slowly and said,
He is large, but he looks only like a man to me. He has knees, he has wrists and elbows. Look how slender his ankles are, supporting all that weight. He has the weaknesses of a man. Durska the Excellent will submit him.
The Excellent? I choked. Nobody heard me. They were all cheering again like a bunch of fools. Bertold stepped close to Durska and began to speak quickly. They seemed to be arguing over it. Bertold looked fairly worried, but Durska was apparently a stoic. He would not be swayed. When Bertold finally understood he could do nothing to bring Durska away from his boast, he only hung his head and shrugged. And then it was on. A funny thing happens to men when they believe they are watching history unfold. They all get caught up together in a mania and think to themselves, what if? You take any sane man away from the mob. Take him, I don't care where, take him into a dark room or something. The point is, you take him away from the mob, away from that energy, and ask him what he thinks will happen. If he is not some kind of shit-eating crazy, he'll answer logically. Ask him to wager money and he'll laugh. Men alone are not stupid. When they are alone, they are realists. Take that same realistic man and put him in a mob, though, and see what happens. See how that energy moves through the mob, reinforces itself, sustains itself, amplifies itself. The men, women, and children buy into the story, and the story grows out of control like a fire raging forth at the utterance of the perfect word. Alone, men are realists. In a mob, men are not sane.
I have 5 marks on the very excellent Durska, someone shouted.
And that was all it took. Money started changing hands wildly as the crowd widened out, spreading slowly away from Risa and I as we stood in the center. I saw the edge retracting like a wave as hands dipped into purses, pulled out shiny coins, thrust shiny coins into other purses. I looked at Risa, shrugged, and said, Well, shit. I suppose you'll have to fight him now. He didn't say, actually, but this is as close as I can come if I were to write it down. It was more a grunt, and while Durska could boom across the field with a shout, Risa sounded like boulders rolling down a mountainside. Don't hit him in the face, I advised. It's not against the rules so much. You should probably just avoid pissing him off. I could see he didn't understand me, so I made a fist with my hand, pressed it up against my cheek, furrowed my brow, and said, Not this, okay? Risa put his fist against his own cheek, smiled, and nodded. Oh, fuck's sake. Look, don't kill him, and don't get killed. I walked over to the edge of the crowd where the betting was the thickest. I pressed in among them, found the people declaring the most strenuously for Durska, and wagered 10 marks. The man I spoke to was at first not receptive to my offer, but then Yander stepped over and said he would cover my wager.
The betting continued on wildly and became ever more complicated, money changing hands from this man to that man, the combined sum then hopping across to be divided between another man and two women, then supplemented with more wagers from another group of our own neighbors, and round and round and round. "Thanks, Yanders," I said. I was surprised he'd supported me.
"My mare seems to be pregnant, Udo."
"Oh. Congratulations, then."
"Yes. Congratulations."
He fell silent, but continued to smile at me. "Yes?" I asked him.
"I don't know how. But I know it was that fucking donkey."
"How could you know that? What proof can you offer?"
"I need none. If your bet lands, your winnings come to me. If your bet misses, I'm taking the twat-hungry donkey as payment."
He faded away into the crowd, smiling. "All right, let's go, Risa," I shouted over the crowd. "That's our man there. Risa for victory." Then there was a moment when the shouting died, and it was just Risa and Durska the Excellent facing each other down in a trampled field of grass. Durska had pulled off his shirt, boots, and pants, showing a body covered in coarse hair and scar tissue. Many women nodded in appreciation at this, but I wasn't fooled. If he'd been standing next to anyone else, Durska would have looked like a nightmare. Beside Risa, he was only a child.
"Good gentlefolk, hear me," Bertold shouted. "Before you now stands Durska, the Excellent, hailing from the village of Klumsen beyond Ruhr, ready to battle the likes of the gr—"
"Oh, somebody gag that asshole, right? Let's get on with it already."
There was more laughter, some of which I suspect was not sober. Bertold shrugged and rejoined the crowd. Durska and Risa continued to stare each other down in the center of the clearing, and soon the only sound was the burbling of the nearby river. They continued to stare each other down, the giant and the giant pretender. No one spoke as Durska readied his mind for the attack, and before long I suspect no one breathed. It was only the sound of the roar passing by, ignoring all of us little men and women standing on her back with our little contests and our small concerns. There came a barking of dogs, and still they did not move. I heard the bleating of a goat back in our village, and still they remained. Durska looked directly at Risa, eyes burning, while Risa looked at everything around him. He seemed confused and agitated. I realized I'd made a horrible mistake. What the fuck was I doing? Hing had entrusted this creature into my keeping, her son, who I was to protect and aid. On the previous day, he couldn't even walk properly, and now here he was injected into the middle of a prize fight, and I had placed him there. I think I muttered something like, "What the fuck have I done? Risa, let's—" And then Durska was charging across the field, head down, arms driving, legs driving, and howling into the morning air like a boar. It frightened the life out of all of us. I heard this shared universal sigh leak out all around me, as if we were all somehow spellstruck, and something cold and sharp began to bind through my guts as I watched him close the gap. Risa was less than a child, and a full-grown killer was running straight at him. I screamed, "Risa!" The mob sent up a cheer that split the clouds overhead. I have to imagine that cheer traveled ever up and up through the clouds and to the country beyond. I sometimes think that cheer must be echoing still up and down the length of Erda's cavern, and if I ever return to that world, I wonder if I'll hear it again. Maybe I will. Perhaps one day I'll return to Erda and stand within Sunna's throne one last time, looking out over that vast expanse, end to end, and hear again that cheer we all released so many years ago. Durska collided with Risa at full speed. Their bodies came together in a wet, cracking slap, so powerful that Durska's entire right shoulder was rose-red later that evening. Risa just stood there and watched him come, as confused as ever. And when the sound of their bodies coming together filled the field, I flinched away. Then there was every kind of sound you could imagine coming at me from all directions. Laughter, screams,
cheering, cursing, wailing. It was an impossible noise, like the shrieking of a many-headed beast. I looked back on the field and saw Risa standing exactly as he had been a moment before, still confused, still looking around at all of us as though he did not understand. Durska was down on his ass and shaking his head. There were many faces I didn't recognize, men and women alike, cajoling him, throwing their arms at him, commanding him to rise. He came to his feet slowly, carefully, still shaking his head, though not as fiercely as before. At first it looked like he was trying to shake his head from his shoulders. Now he appeared only to be testing his equilibrium. Risa glanced at me and shrugged, eyes disbelieving. "You're doing wonderfully," I shouted. "Keep it up." Some of the others from my village cheered Risa's name in support, but he only appeared scandalized. Then Durska was coming on again, slower this time. He approached cautiously, darting his head this way and that, hands up at the shoulder level with the palms out like a real wrestler. His eyes were drawn to slits, and he grinned cruelly, white teeth showing through the matting of his beard. Many of us tensed as he closed the distance, wondering what he would do next. He edged closer and closer, taking careful, probing steps, and we all watched him in awe. Then Risa, who was still confused, reached out and poked Durska in the chest. I think it must have been the laughter from the crowd that caused Durska to lose his composure. He threw his arms around Risa's midsection, which was probably the wrong thing. Durska was much taller than the rest of us, so it's not like he caught a face full of giant meat, but his head did bounce off Risa's belly. Durska struggled for a few moments to lock his wrists around the giant's waist, but he could barely get his fingertips together. The laughter then became worse when Durska's shoulder disturbed the ragged loincloth I'd fashioned, and the monster it hid flashed out from beneath the bottom, threatening to bludgeon Durska in the chin. All of us heard his panicked cry echo across the field, and he released Risa immediately, falling back several steps as he sputtered. "Careful, Durska," Herdin called. "I think he likes you." More laughter, some of it coming even from Durska's own people. From somewhere over my right shoulder, I heard a woman mutter, "About as excellent as my hanging tits." Durska came on again, this time with some anger mixed in, as Risa stood there watching him. The laughter from the mob seemed to have infected the giant so that he laughed cautiously along with us, which only infuriated Durska more. He grabbed at Risa's wrists, his arms, tried to seize and lift his leg, shoved against him, threw his body into him, struck him in the stomach, in the chest, in the arms. Risa accepted it all, like a father standing easily against the storm of his child's tantrum. After a while, the onlookers stopped finding it so funny. Those from our village soon became bored, and the visitors grew sullen. Many began to grumble, and I could tell by the way they did it that they were returning to the opinion that Risa was somehow a cheat, which I suppose he actually was, strictly speaking. They became more sullen as Durska continued fruitlessly, and pretty soon I heard words like forfeit and loss by default getting passed around. This was terrible news. There were 10 marks I didn't have riding on this contest, and what was more, my donkey, Ambrosius. I was unsure how the bets would resolve if they called the match a draw or a no contest, or what if they decided that Risa had lost due to his lack of action. If the fight were to be judged on the basis of blows landed, Durska was the clear victor. Efficacy be damned. Risa's confusion was coming perilously close to costing me more than I had to give. "Risa! Hey, Risa!" I shouted. He looked at me, his face as clear and innocent as any baby. "Smack the goat fucker," I shouted. "Smack him. Shove him down. By hell, throw him in the river. Something. Anything. For the love of decency, please." I flapped my arms at him like an old hen as I shouted. When I realized my words were probably meaningless, I began to pantomime hitting an invisible attacker for him, nodding my head slowly to let him know it was okay and that he should do as I did. He continued staring at me, mouth hanging. All the while, Durska kept adjusting his grip as he twisted and grunted to find some kind of workable leverage. Risa and I just ignored Durska. He seemed like the least of our problems.
Like this, Risa. Just swing your arm. Side to side, see? Side to side.
Risa swung his right hand out cautiously as if swatting lazily at a fly. It was a lucky shot. The giant was still staring right at me, ignoring Durska, who was still pulling and prodding like an enraged weasel, but his knuckles grazed the side of Durska's head. He went sprawling in the grass, seemed to slide over the ground a few paces, and came to rest. He held his limbs out straight and rigid, the muscles of his chest bunching and loosening disjointedly while his hands flexed into fists and relaxed spasmodically.
"Sweet and merciful frig, he's out cold!" someone shouted.
There was perhaps the space of a breath after Durska fell when I could still see the giant clearly in the field. He seemed to be approaching Durska as the poor man continued to twitch like some kind of slip-and-fall case. I saw the look of fear in the giant's eyes, the shock and the worry and the heartbreak. Before the crowd rushed in and surrounded him, cheering his name, singing his name, as if he'd earned his seat within the pantheon.